This podcast is intended for adult audiences only and contains explicit language in spicy situations. And we do not replace any advice of professionals, and the views and opinions expressed by our guests do not reflect our own.
Welcome to the Pineapple Express podcast, and I'm your host, Kylie, aka Sexy Swinger Chick.
And I'm Brad, aka Brad the Space Cadet.
Journey with us as we navigate an ethical non-monogamy, sex positivity, sex work, and relationship advice as millennial swingers.
Explore with us as we share some of our upside down pineapple adventures with you.
All aboard the Pineapple Express.
Hi, my lovely upside down pineapple friends. So I wanted to do a podcast on safety tips in the swinger lifestyle. So this is like going to go over quite a few things, obviously like health safety tips. And then we're going to go over like personal safety and like drugs and alcohol and all that stuff. So this podcast was prompted because I was on like one of my local swinger groups and somebody had posted something about like to watch out for this couple. They're like posing as a swinger couple and they're like robbing couples. And I was like, how did this never occur to me that like this is a thing? But of course, there's always going to be bad apples who are going to infiltrate every facet of everything in the world. Like that's just kind of the way that society is. Like there's criminals, and criminals are probably like, oh, swingers, let me see how I can, you know, make this a problem, right? So, and then I read like one news story about this. So obviously it happens, but it's not like a common thing. Again, I've been in the lifestyle for 3 years and I've never heard of anything like this. So I made a TikTok about it and I just talked about like safety tips and stuff. And a lot of people had a lot of things to say. So I thought I would do just a whole entire podcast about this because I think it's really important to talk about. And I hope you guys enjoy. So I am not a doctor, but I can talk a little bit about STDs and STIs. I would love to have a doctor come on the podcast and talk about this, but I'm going to do my best to talk about it in, you know, just from a normal person's perspective. But, you know, I just think it's a really important conversation to have because it's actually one of the biggest things that I get asked is like, how do swingers prevent STDs and STIs, and I think it's really important to talk about. So first of all, we're going to talk numbers and statistics. So when talking about statistics, especially within the swinger lifestyle, it's kind of difficult even to get a great real number, right? Because so many swingers are in the closet and they don't talk about their swinger lifestyle. So it's really difficult to get a full perspective. And I just want to make that disclaimer before this. Like, this is the most recent study, and this is a 2020 study. Well, it's one of the most recent ones I could find, and it's an international study. So that means that they, you know, studied people from all over the world. And basically, 7.5% of participants in swinging reported that they had ever contacted an STI during swinging. So a lot of the STIs that people do, because that also puts in like bacterial vaginosis, bladder infections, and as well as yeast infections. So of those, 11.5% were women and 6% were men. And the highest rate of infections were, like I said, bacterial vaginosis, yeast infections, and bladder infections, which are actually quite common in any sort of consensual sex practices, right? Like, I am a girly who has suffered from BV literally since I was 25. I just got it one day and it's like just loves to, you know, come back. Same thing with like when I started having sex, obviously I would get bladder infections or UTIs. And those are pretty common, especially among women, you know, in their late teens all the way up until, you know, they, you know, get into their elderly age. So sometimes those things just happen. Again, same thing with yeast infections, because a lot of those can be like sexually transmitted, but also not necessarily. So that's the difficult part of it. But yeah, so I mean, this is among the rate of swingers. So 7.5% have said that they've contracted an STI. And this was in a 2020 study by JSN Sexual Medicine. So, I mean, that kind of gives you an overview. Then some studies say that like 10.4% of swingers have had an STI. So basically what these studies and all of the studies that they've done conclusively had said like less than 15% of swingers have contracted an STI since they've been in the lifestyle. Now, there is an age, I guess you could say, factor in all of this. So among the greatest risk of swingers contracting an STI are swingers who are over the age of 45. So I'm assuming, and this is just my assumption, there's like literally no research on this, but I'm assuming that's because like my generation, you know, the 30s and even upwards till about like, I would say 45, you know, we had a vast majority of us had a great education on STIs and STDs in health class in school, right? Like we grew up literally from like fifth grade on every single year. Like we had a class about like STIs and STDs. So like we really were ingrained in our, you know, society to use protection and like how to protect ourselves and all of that. So I'm assuming that's probably why maybe the people who are over the age of 45 did not get that same sort of education in public school. That's just my assumption. I don't know necessarily. My experience within the lifestyle has been very rarely do people not use protection. Very rarely do people not disclose their STI status. And usually if somebody's going to disclose an STI status, it has to do with herpes or HSV. So in most of the time, like they will disclose that to you. Now, I'm not saying all the time. I'm saying most of the time, like if I'm talking to somebody online and we're messaging back and forth, a lot of times they'll be like, hey, just so you know, like we have HSV1 or HSV2, like this is, you know, something that we just disclose to people, you know, just if they don't feel safe, you know, having consensual sex with us, then we understand. And I think that's really awesome. And same thing with like the use of condoms. When it comes to condoms, like pretty much every experience that I've had when it comes to swinging, like everybody was like cool with condoms. There's only been a couple of times where the guys have been like, hey, I can't get hard with a condom on. And then that's your choice to be like, okay, not going to do that. Or your choice to be like, okay, that's fine. I know within, you know, groups of swingers who are like smaller groups who have like house parties and like they're always, you know, having the same partners a lot of times, because that does happen, believe it or not. Those people are like okay with, you know, not using condoms. But like, even then, it's like really risky and something that I haven't saw very much of. I've heard of it before, but I've never really seen it. So just an FYI, when it comes to condoms, like pretty much every single person in the lifestyle who I have come in contact with, which I've traveled all around the United States. I've been to some of the biggest events of, you know, the country, and pretty much everybody I've encountered has used a condom and, like I said, disclosed any sort of like STI status. And a lot of women, you know, when talking about BV and yeast infections and like bladder infections and stuff, again, like you can't always know if that was an STI or if it was something that like the woman's body just made, or maybe like her husband caught it and then he's like passing it back and forth to her. And like, so that's the thing. So I always disclose to people, like if I'm having a sort of like a BV flare up, I'll be like, hey, just so you know. And like, I'm really good about my boric acid, which we'll talk a little bit about that later, but I'm really good about my boric acid. And that really seems to help keep the symptoms at bay. And like, I've done the antibiotic stuff and it just likes to come back. I really wish that more people would like do, more doctors would do research on BV, because it's like really difficult. And it's the same thing with like a yeast. And first of all, if I have a yeast infection, I'm not playing with anybody, because ow, I hate those. And same thing with bladder infections. I will be honest with you, when we first started in the swinger lifestyle, we had one partner, and multiple times with this one partner, I kept catching UTIs. Mind you, I had never had a UTI. Like, I don't want to say never, but like I hadn't had a UTI for like 5 or 10 years. So I knew it was this partner that I kept catching it from. So I mean, a lot, that is really just like being, you know, it's cleanliness. It's the guys making sure that like they wash their penises maybe before play, and the girls like making sure that they're also being cleanly and like using baby wipes and, you know, or feminine wipes or anything like that. So a lot of this stuff can seriously be prevented just by over the counter easy stuff. So, like, I don't have to explain to you guys how you contract STIs. I hope not. If you're listening to this, I hope that you have enough education on that. And if you don't, I have lots of friends and lots of resources that I can send you to. I know the Shameless Care website is really, really good about all of this. But the one thing I will say that a lot of times we forget about, and there's two things, right? So when it comes to penetration, like, everybody always use condoms, right? But like, do we use condoms A, on sex toys, and B, when we are giving oral? And I'm gonna say no, that's not a huge thing in the swinger lifestyle. So, you know, and like girl stuff, we usually don't use dental dams. First of all, dental dams are super hard to find, and second of all, like, it's just not a thing. Now, when it comes to sex toys, you know, everybody's really clean about them, and everybody makes, like, you know, and this is something to talk about too, like, make sure if you're bringing a sex toy to a club, which, you know, I have lots of friends who do so, like, let's make sure that, like, we are cleaning them beforehand. I know I shouldn't have to say this, but, like, cleaning them beforehand, cleaning them afterwards, just, you know, for health and safety reasons. And same thing when it comes to, like, so when it comes to using condoms for, like, oral, I get it. A lot of people don't. And that's why testing is so important. So when it comes to testing, like, I know it can be like super weird going into your doctor every 3 months and being like, I need an STI test. And then they're going to be like, well, why do you come in so frequently for these? And then you have to be like, well, I'm a swinger. Because they're going to be like, well, you're married, you know, like, your status is you're married or that you have a partner, because, you know, your doctor always asks you that, and then they ask you your sexuality. So if you don't have a doctor like me, who my doctor is a gay man, so he is fucking amazing and awesome, and I love him to death, because like I told him, yeah, I'm like, I'm not monogamous, you know, I'm a swinger. He's like, oh, cool. So I just need you to come in like every 3 months or, you know, whatever. And so if you can't do that, if that's not possible, I mean, especially like some of us live in small towns and there's only one gynecologist, and, you know, the gynecologist is your grandma's best friend, and like, you don't want to tell the gynecologist that you're a swinger. I get that. So that's why, like, Shameless Care and different, there, you don't have to use Shameless Care, but there's a ton of different like STI, you know, tests that you can get, like, and they can ship it to your house, and then you can ship it to them, and then they can lab test it. The reason why I always tell people to use Shameless Care is because Shameless Care, like, they do the oral gonorrhea stuff. So, and if you listen to the Swing Nation podcast where they have Robert Johnson, the CEO of that company, on there, he talks about how, like, he was at an event and he engaged in oral with somebody, and they called him and they were like, yeah, I have oral gonorrhea. And he found out that he had gonorrhea. Oral gonorrhea, did not know that, like, he didn't have any symptoms. And symptoms of oral gonorrhea and chlamydia, which are the most common ones to get in your throat, are, like, super rare, right? So unless you get tested for it, like, you're not going to know that you have it. And then a couple of years ago, there was a content creator outbreak so with oral gonorrhea or oral chlamydia. I'm not 100% sure, because nobody really gave a lot of information on it. All we knew was like that filming for the content creators in that space were like, it was halted for a while because there was a breakout of this. And you guys, it happens. Like, this is a risk that you take when you are swinging. Just like when you walk out your door in the morning and you put your keys in your ignition and you drive in your car, you take a risk, right? And this is like the biggest thing that people always say, well, you guys are spreading STIs, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not spreading STIs. It's not spreading anything. It's a risk. There are risks to everything that you do in life. So most STIs are cured with like an antibiotic, right? So like if you do catch oral gonorrhea, like is it the end of the fucking world? No, I had gonorrhea when I was 18. I caught it from my ex-boyfriend, and like I went to the doctor. They gave me like an antibiotic and it was cleared in like 2 weeks. Like it's not the end of the world, right? Like there is, it's 2024. Like we can handle this. Like they even have, you know, PrEP and stuff like that for HIV. So obviously like HIV is not common in the swinger lifestyle, but, you know, because you are engaging in a lot of same sex and you're engaging with same sex with, you know, people who are engaging with that, like it is something to think about, but just remember that like it's 2024 and like there, you know, the risk that you're taking is pretty minimal. It's similar to a risk that you take when you go out in the wintertime and spread colds and spread COVID. Like I've said this before and I'll say it again, like every single time that I've caught COVID has literally been at a swingers event. Is that the end of the world? No, because I'm not immunocompromised. I'm very healthy. I got through it. I was fine. And now my immune system is fucking awesome because of it. And like, same with my fiance, you know, so like you do take that risk. And if that's a risk that you're not willing to take, then maybe engaging in swinger sex is not for you. And it's okay to say, hey, I don't want to maybe like catch gonorrhea in my throat and like I don't want to catch chlamydia. Like that's fine. I understand that. And like I said, when it comes to herpes, like people who do have herpes in the swinger lifestyle and know about it, like this is the other thing about herpes. Sometimes you don't know that you have it. Sometimes you don't have any symptoms, especially in men. So like if you do know that you have something like that, and it also genital warts like can be symptomless. So like it's important to get tested for all of this stuff as often as possible. Like I said, we do it every 3 months or like after every like or before every big event. And then if we engage with like multiple new partners in a small time period, we won't. Now, like this past year in 2023, like we did not engage with new partners from January all the way until like I want to say September. Like we didn't get with any new partners. We only soft swapped, and like even then it was like very soft swap and in parallel play, right? And then the partners that we had played with, we had played with like previously who had just gotten tested. So like we decided, okay, so we got tested right before Naughty in New Orleans, and then we were like, well, we only engaged with, you know, this couple that we had previously engaged with. They just got a test, so like we're good. And that was like a decision that we made. So then in September when we went to an event, we were able to play because we were like, this is fine, you know, we feel safe with this. So it's obviously like, because not everybody in the swinger lifestyle is like fucking multiple people multiple times that they go to these events. Like sometimes they're just not, and so it's to your discretion on when to get, you know, you don't have, there's no like time period, you know, because I feel like, okay, well, if me and Brad have been doing a lot of swinging and like having a lot of new partners, then like maybe it's best that we get tested more frequently or less frequently. So it all depends on like you and your partner. Like we can't really put a number on it, but again, you know, there's tons of information out there about STDs and STIs. I would highly recommend going on the Shameless Care website and looking them up, and you know, they have a whole guide to STIs, which is an awesome resource. And again, like they do discreet, you know, they do discreet like tests for people, you know, so nobody has to know that you're getting tested. And they have all different types of tests, and I highly recommend the oral gonorrhea and oral chlamydia tests, because again, like you never know. I remember like 2 years ago I had this. So I have Epstein-Barr syndrome, which if you don't know what that is, basically it's like mono, that if you had mono when you were younger, it can come back and just flare up in your body. There's, you don't catch anything. It's just when you get immunocompromised. So like my throat was hurting me for like a month and I kept going to the doctor and the doctor was like, I don't know what's wrong with you. You don't have strep throat. Like you don't have the flu. You're fine. So it kept hurting me, So I'm like, motherfucker, I need to get. And so I had to like fight with my doctor to test me for oral gonorrhea and oral chlamydia. I had to be like, listen, bro, my fucking throat hurts and I'm a swinger and I need to get tested for this. I didn't have it, obviously, but I was like so scared that I did. And, you know, so like it's definitely something to think about, especially because a lot of swingers aren't, you know, using, again, condoms for that. So make sure they're getting tested. And I think, you know, somebody who's like in the online content creator space where I'm making, you know, videos with people for OnlyFans, like I think it's even more important to get tested because like that's your work and you don't want to put somebody out of work if you accidentally give them an STD and STI. So it's really important to get tested. So definitely get tested. If you don't know where to get them that are discreet, I have a link in the show notes for Shameless Care. Highly recommend them. And yeah, so that is my spiel on like safety when it comes to health of your swinger lifestyle, right? So that's health related. So condoms, getting tested, you know, disclosing any statuses to people are all things that we should be doing and we should be doing often. So the next thing I want to talk about is drinking and drugs, right? So the swinger lifestyle, I have been a part of it for 3 years and you know, alcohol is a part of the culture. Alcohol loosens us up. We know this. Alcohol makes it a little bit easier, less anxiety, especially when you're talking with new people, especially when it comes to sex, because that can be kind of scary. So sometimes, you know, alcohol helps us and opens us up a little bit. Like I said, most clubs and events that I've attended do have alcohol in them, or you bring your own. And you know, especially when you're attending like private parties, same thing, like a lot of people will bring their own alcohol. So it's kind of the norm. And it's recommended that if you want to drink, that you make sure to stay in control. So what does staying in control mean? Not what I used to do. If you don't know this, I'm an ex-drinker. I'm an alcoholic. So staying in control is from a legal standpoint. Okay. So these are just like legally, the over consent limit is if you've had, more to drink than like you can drive a car. So if you're over the legal limit legally, that's where consent is not a thing, right? So if there is some sort of an SA situation, that's, you know, from a legal standpoint, over the limit is if you've had more than like being able to drive, which I don't know exactly what the legal limit is. I think it's 0.08. But, you know, that's something to think about. What does that look like for you? We all have different bodies. We all, you know, process alcohol a little bit differently. I know I had gastric bypass, so like I process alcohol way differently than a lot of people. It goes literally right through me. So I could drink, and then all of a sudden I would just not be in control. And every time I did not get in control, my partner had to be like, bro, you're not in control. Like, we can't consent right now. So that's something to think about when it comes to alcohol. Is it safe to drink at events? Yes. Should you excessively drink at events? No, because of consent. Now, the other thing that I want to talk about when it comes to drinking at events is, can you get date raped? Can you get drugged? Yes. Have I seen this happen? Yes. There, it is something that it's not common. I haven't heard about it a lot. I've heard from a friend, you know, that like there was this event and they got date raped. And I guess I haven't seen it in person. I've just heard about it. So, but I've heard of this happening. again, it's not common, but it's something to think about. They have some things that you can get, some like different products to help you so that you don't get date raped or somebody doesn't give you a roofie, you know. So they have like those things that you can put over your drinks. They're kind of like just these like lids that you can put over them. Obviously, like, don't leave your drinks unattended. Always have them with you. A lot of times, something that swingers use to keep them safe is they will bring their own cups with lids on them, and it just makes life a lot easier, and you don't lose your cup and you don't have to keep going back to the bar to get drinks. So like, that's what we always do, is like, we just bring our own cups with our own lids on them. They're like tumblers or Stanley cups, since those are all the rage right now. You can bring one of those, you know. So you know, just something to think about, though, something to consider, like, just being safe about drink. And I mean, this goes with like any sort of, like, if you go out to a bar, you have to think about these things, right? Like, more people that have gotten roofied that I know of at a vanilla bar than I know of at a swinger club. But it's, again, something to consider, something to think about. Like, you know, we want to be safe. We want to take all of the precautions. And we just want to make sure that we're, you know, are in our right minds, right? So when it comes to drugs, do people do drugs at swingers parties? Yes. Is it common? It depends. So it really depends on the culture of the community. And I'll say this, it really depends on the culture of the community. One thing that I've seen, and this is just me being completely authentic and honest, one of the bigger drugs that people use at swinger events would be Molly, ecstasy, or, you know, those types of drugs, psychedelic drugs, mushrooms, acid. Those are the most common other than weed. I've never seen anybody pull out cocaine. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist in the swinger lifestyle, but I'm sure it does. Adderall and upper people have, you know, I've seen that be abused at parties and events. But I'm not saying that it happens at every party and it happens within every community, but it does. And it's something to think about. If, you know, it's just like with anything. If you go out to a vanilla bar, there's probably 10 people in the bathroom doing cocaine or on Molly, you know. So like, it happens, you guys. Like, people do drugs, okay? You don't have to engage in it, but like, people do them. A lot of clubs and events have very strict no drug policies. So that's another thing to think about. Like, if you're thinking about doing drugs at a swinger event, it's probably like not going to go in your favor, because like, people do have these very strict no drug policies. So just something to think about, you know. And even though like the legalization of weed has been a topic, because in a lot of states it is either recreationally legal or it is medicinally legal, or, you know, but a lot of places still do refrain from allowing people to use marijuana, which, if you want my personal opinion on that, I think weed is way better than alcohol. And I think weed would be something that would, like, I would prefer swinger clubs allow that and not alcohol. That's my personal opinion, especially because cannabis can be very helpful for your sex life. And, like, it's natural. And I agree with that more than alcohol. But, like, also, you know, we're still in 2024 and like, it's not legal everywhere. So they're probably just covering their butts. I totally understand that. But like, that's my personal opinion. But again, like, you don't have to agree with me on that. So like I said, most events and clubs and stuff do check people's stuff and make sure that they're not doing drugs. Obviously, there's ways to sneak things in. So I'm not saying that people don't do them, but it's very rare that you're going to hear about it unless you're in certain communities. And that's just the honest to God. Like, it's very hush hush, very quiet. So when it comes to the safety of swingers clubs themselves, most of the time the club or event has their own security to keep you safe. And if something happens where you feel unsafe, it's a really good idea to go and talk to security and let them know, hey, I feel unsafe. This person you know, touched me without consent. This person, like, tried to do this without consent, right? So, like, that's why those people are there. There's also sometimes, like, consent people at parties. I know Safer Sex, which they're with the Body Shop, they have a lot of people go out to different big events, and they also have, like, consent liaisons as well at these parties. So they're relatively, swinger clubs are safe. You can't bring any sort of, like, weapons in there, you know, but they are relatively safe. I will say this. In my 3 years of swinging, I have seen one fight break out, and this was when we were at a party here in Cleveland, and the people that started the fight, first of all, alcohol played a huge factor in this, and they were newer to the lifestyle. The girl did something that the guy didn't like. He did not like seeing her with this guy. And in the middle of, like, the lounge area, he started a fight with her and started to, like, he called her a bitch and a whore and a slut and said, like, why don't you go fuck him again, you piece of shit slut. And there was a lot of, like, men in the room, and the men in the room were, like, not cool with this because he was, like, verbally assaulting her in front of everybody, and she's crying, and then he starts, like, pulling on her arm, and he's like, let's fucking go, you fucking piece of shit whore. And my husband is a lot of things. One thing that he is not is somebody who will allow a woman to be abused in front of him, especially because he could tell, like, the guy was being, like, trying to assault. And so I ran and got the security guard, and him and the guys in the room were like, hey, dude, like, why don't you step away for a minute and relax and calm down? Like, you're making a scene in the club. Like, this isn't cool. And they basically were trying to talk this guy down, and he was trying to, like, square up with my husband and some of the other guys. So finally, security gets in there. The guy's, like, trying to square up with the security guards, and they had to carry this man out. Like, all the guys and the security guards had to, like, carry him out because he was just being such a little asshole. And he was, like, a small guy. Like, he wasn't actually going to do anything. But, you know, they ended up taking care of it, and it was fine. And security was, like, really – security was honestly, like, really level-headed with him. A lot of the other guys in the room were, like, ready to, like, beat the shit out of this guy because he was being such a douche to his girl and to everybody in the room. So that's the only situation where I've personally ever seen, like, a fight break out where, like, security needed to be involved. And, like, do those things happen? I'm sure they do. I'm sure they happen everywhere. I'm sure that's not the first or the last time, but that is why security is there, because security is going to make sure that, like, they get out of the situation. Again, whenever alcohol is involved, this is why we have, like, bouncers at clubs and stuff, you guys, because alcohol tends to make some people, like, kind of loopy and angry, or maybe they're happy drunk, but, like, sometimes they can be angry drunks, and, you know, this can cause issue for some people, and it happens. You know, this is just a part of life. There are assholes in every community. But that's why security is there. And when it comes to house parties, I would say it's probably a little bit more unsafe, especially because, you know, it's a small, they don't typically employ security for these types of parties. And if you don't really know the people that well, I would probably refrain from going them if you're afraid of something unsafe happening, just because you never know. I've never been to a house party. I've been to, like, Airbnb parties with my friends who I know really well, and I know that they would, like, never let anything happen to me. But you have to know your surroundings and know where you're going and know who you're around, and sometimes at house parties you don't. So that's why I would just err on the side of caution when it comes to house parties, unless you really know the people. So we are going to take a short break, and I'm going to give you guys a word from our sponsors. They keep this podcast going. Some, you know, podcasters have paywalls for their podcast. What I like to do is keep this free for everybody. But it does cost me money to put these out, and time and energy and all that. So if you guys could just do me a huge favor and listen to my sponsors, if any of them seem good or interesting to you, please use them because it's amazing and I get a little bit of commission from it. So
I get asked all the time, how do I get into the non-monogamous lifestyle? And I've got the solution for you. It's the 3FUN app. It's the best dating app for couples and singles looking to explore open relationships. It's totally millennial friendly, aka it's in the 21st century, you guys. This is finally a dating app for us non-monogamous folks who are looking for a unicorn. Maybe you're looking for a bull. Maybe you're looking for a couple. This is my favorite app, and I use it all the time. If you want to find a link to it, just go to www.sexyswingerchick.net, and you'll find my link. Hope to see you guys there.
Hey, Upside Down Pineapple people. Join the millions of couples enjoying amazing sex with Promescent. I personally love the variety of products they offer, and their aloe-based lube is the only lube I've ever used that doesn't throw off my pH. Brad loves their delay spray, which is clinically proven to help men last longer in bed. Their products have a 60-day money-back guarantee and free shipping on orders in the U.S. over $10. Their shipping is discreet and private, which is perfect for us in the swinger lifestyle. Make sure that you go to www.promescent.com/Kylie for all your discreet sexual health needs. My link is in the show notes. Promescent helps you live your best upside down pineapple life.
Most people have unprotected oral sex, right? Be honest. Now think about your last STD test. Did your doctor tickle your throat with something that looked like a giant Q-tip? Probably not. Yet that's the only way to check for oral gonorrhea or chlamydia, which are often asymptomatic. You need a better doctor. You need shamelesscare.com. Use coupon code CHIC, that's C-H-I-C, at checkout.
So the last safety tips that I'm going to talk about is like if you're meeting couples for dates and bringing them back to your house or going back to their house. So this is a facet of swinging that me and my partner do not personally engage with. Me and my partner, when we swing, we go to big events, which, like I said, typically have security and typically have like a safety net, or, you know, we would go to house parties, but we don't. Like that's just not something that we do. If we do engage with going to a swinger's house or them coming back to our house, which we really haven't, we've done that one time, and that was with a couple that we've known for years, even before the lifestyle. Okay, so they were actually our friends who helped us get into the lifestyle. But other than that, you know, we don't really engage with this sort of like swinging, which again, like some people do this. They meet people online. Maybe they meet unicorns. Maybe they meet other swingers and or single men. And this is something that they commonly do. So I'm going to give you guys some tips on how to stay safe from being robbed or being put into a situation that is unsafe. So definitely the first thing is to know that, like, no matter how long you've been talking to the person online, you truly never know who's behind that screen. And, you know, you don't know who you're dealing with. So making sure that you take proper precautions, meet them in a public place. Don't just meet them at a hotel. Don't just meet them at their house or your house. Like, meet them in a public, well-lit area. And then make sure that, like, somebody, like a trusted friend has your location, or you can use, like, the Life 360 app. I know that, like, if me and my partner were engaging in this sort of swinging, that I would, like, give my Life 360 to, like, you know, one of my really good friends and be like, hey, I'm here. You know, if I don't leave, you know, the next morning or something like that, make sure that, like, you try to come get me or try to find me, you know, or if I'm not communicating with you or whatever. So that's just a safety precaution. And then definitely make sure that you get your own transportation to wherever you're meeting. Like, don't let them come pick you up. Get an Uber. Like, make sure that you, but I would definitely, like, see if one of the you or your partner can stay sober so that, like, you don't have to get your own transportation, like an Uber. But if you absolutely can't do that and you have to, you know, make sure that you're not having anybody else come and pick you. I mean, I really just want to say no to the Uber thing. And I think that you should like drive there, because if you need to get out of a situation, you at least have your own vehicle to get out of a situation. And then if people are picking you up, like if the other, you know, party is picking you up, then they know where you live. And that's like scary too. So just make sure that like you have your own transportation. And, you know, make sure that like, again, and we talked about like, drugs and alcohol, like try to one of you stay as sober as possible. That's what me and Brad like to do. Like I'm obviously sober, so like I'm the DD, and like we stay sober, one of us at least, so that we can have our wits about us. And when I used to drink, Brad used to stay relatively sober. I mean, and he does now, but it's just definitely like if you're engaging in too much drugs and alcohol, like that's going to make you more vulnerable to a robbery or some sort of an assault. So just try to avoid it, you know, and do a little digging on these people. Okay. Google is your friend. Like Google them. Do they have any like prior convictions for like assault? Like, are they, you know, look up their name, like do just a little digging, like even going on their social media and trying like figuring them out, you know, like do your own sort of like background check on them. And if you feel the need to like do an actual background check, then maybe pay for that, you know? And then again, like don't ever leave your drinks unattended when you go out, you know, use the precautions to stay safe. And just, yeah, so make sure that like you're, imagine this, like you're dating in the vanilla world, right? So like you wouldn't just not take any proper safety precautions if you are meeting a guy on Tinder or a girl on Tinder, right? Like that's not cool. So like just make all the proper safety precautions, because it's a very rare thing that like somebody's going to get robbed or assaulted or something like that. It's very rare. But it does happen, and it's something to think about, and it's just something to talk about with your partner. Like, hey, maybe we need to talk about like our safety precautions, because I can honestly tell you that like me and Brad have made some dumb fucking decisions. Like I can tell you our first swinger experience, we shouldn't have done this. We're lucky that it ended up well. We were relatively safe. It was honestly the couple probably shouldn't have done this because they barely knew us. But we had met this couple, you know, our first night swinging at the club, and it was during COVID. And I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. And it was closing at like 9, and they were like, "Hey, come to our house." And they had no idea who the fuck me and Brad were. We could have totally robbed them, right? And obviously, we would never do something like that. But, you know, we had our own transportation, though, and we were safe and everything was safe. So, you know, it worked out for us. So, like I said, it's very rare, but we probably should have, like, thought that out a little bit better. Or maybe they should have. I don't know. But anyhow, it's just something to think about, something to consider. So I had a follower write into me after I talked about the safety tips for swinging, talking about, you know, robberies and assaults and stuff like that. And they wrote into me, and I kind of wanted to share this story. It's not 100% when it comes to safety, but because what happened in their situation is not like totally unsafe, like physically, but I guess emotionally, and like this is kind of a lot to unpack this situation, but I'm going to talk about it anyways. So this person wants to stay anonymous, but they said, I would just ask to stay anonymous, but if you're going to talk about it, you know, make sure that you talk about it. And yeah, they said it's kind of a safety thing, but not really. So they said, about 5 years ago, the love of my life and I started exploring and going to a lifestyle club. Our second or third trip, we met a couple and hung out for a bit. Both had similar wedding bands and said they were married, and we didn't think anything of it. After a while, things started getting playful. The ladies had some fun with each other in the public areas. Then we all decided to try a full swap. While I stopped at the restroom, they told my fiance they were both married, but not to each other. She told me when I came back quietly, and it did make me a little uncomfortable, but I was also pretty excited, as was everyone else. So it ends up becoming a soft swap due to my nerves and performance anxiety. So after the girls exchanged numbers, I actually got along with the guy because we had some common interests. Well, more interests than I had known. He ended up getting a hold of my girl's number and texting us both. and became, I'll say, passive aggressive. Ding, ding, ding. First red flag. The man is getting a hold of your woman's number and texting her. A lot of swingers have this safety precaution within their, you know, emotional, I guess, safety, right, to not do that. Now, do all swingers have that? No. But for me and my partner, it really depends. But kind of a red flag and something to think about when it comes to safety and boundaries. So he said, so I asked him not to contact us any longer, and I thought that was the end of it. We did continue to go to the club and see that lady there, so the other married woman. We liked her and we hung out with her and had done some group stuff with her and others included. Outside of a shared BJ with her and my fiance, nothing happened between me and her. So we continued going on weekends and it was fun. We met up with so many great people, but we stopped going in mid-May. The day after Thanksgiving, my girl finally comes out and tells me that she's been seeing someone else. I worked all night and would sleep during the day 4 days a week. She wouldn't say, but I found out it was a dude from the soft swap. He had been communicating with her the whole time. So after I moved out, not my choice, I continued to try to get her back, and we were together many times over the next year. He strung her along for a couple of years before he left his wife. She would tell me all these great things he had done and how he was the successful businessman, all of his degrees. So I hired a PI to check it all out. Total fraud, like a con artist, basically. Gave her the proof and she said, I made it all up. So yeah, I feel robbed, I guess. I don't hold any bad feelings for the lifestyle, but there definitely is some predators out there fucking up people's lives. I just happen to be a victim of one of them. I have only told two other people about this, so please, if you share this story, keep it anonymous. So, of course, I'm going to keep it anonymous for you, but a couple of things that I want to unpack here. So, first thing I want to unpack is boundaries, and we talk about this in our boundary podcast that I did with Lauren, Swinging Lifestyle Coach. Boundaries are there for safety. And I talk about this too in my jealousy podcast with Professor Playtime. But boundaries are there for safety. And this is something that is a part of safety in the swinger lifestyle. And it's the boundaries and agreements within the couples. And respecting each other's boundaries and agreements. And respecting your partner's boundaries and agreements. Because they're what keep us safe internally and emotionally. And there was a lot of red flags in the situation. First of all, the first red flag was that this guy was going to a swingers club with somebody that he was not married to, but they were both married. Have I seen that? Actually, yes, I have. I've met lots of couples who do that, and they're polyamorous, but they're married to, you know, other people. So, like, these are things to really talk about before engaging with other couples. But that was, like, I would definitely say the first red flag, was that they didn't really, like, disclose that outwardly and make it a thing. They totally should have made that a thing and been like, yeah, we're polyamorous, or, like, you know, like, they really should have, like, delved into that discussion, because that would have been a huge red flag. And then again, the second red flag is, like, the texting without consent of both partners and, like, doing it behind the back. And then the third red flag was, like, that this other guy is, you know, the guy that stole the fiance is, like, well, I don't want to say stole, but, like, you know what I mean. He kind of made a lot of stuff up and was kind of lying. It was, like, a master manipulator based on what the PI said. So, like, just a lot of red flags. But are there people in the lifestyle like this? Yes. Are there people in the lifestyle who, like, and I've talked about this with unicorns, our experience with we had this, a very similar experience with a unicorn, where she was married or in a relationship, and then she was coming to the club without her partner's knowledge. Now, he knew, like, that she was going out, but he didn't know where she was going or what she was doing. And then, like, it was kind of a don't ask, don't tell situation. Like, well, what he doesn't know can't hurt him kind of a thing. And are there people in lifestyle like this? Yes. Is it common? No. Like, I've heard stories like this, but you only hear them, you know, through people. It can happen. It's a risk that you take when you get into the swinger lifestyle. People say to me all the time, I'm so worried that, like, I'm going to lose my partner to somebody else that they meet, or, you know, becoming poly. You know, do people break up if they're in a marriage that was monogamous and then they decide to go non-monogamous and then they meet somebody else and then they fall apart and blah, blah, blah? Can those things happen? Yes, those are risks that you take when you get into this lifestyle. Okay, like, you take that risk. If you are not willing to do the work to A, avoid that, or B, like, be okay with that, accept that, like, your relationship was not the right one, and accepting that, like, these things can happen. Like, again, these are risks that you take, and you can put all of the safety measures in place and all of the boundaries and all of the agreements and do all the right things, and, like, this still could happen. But it's good to put those safety measures, and I really feel like boundaries and agreements are in having the right ones that work for you and your partner, and really communicating about it and over communicating. I told him, you know, and this was my response to him, was like, if your partner started having feelings for somebody else, why couldn't they have come to you and said, hey, I'm starting to have feelings for this guy. Maybe we can open up our relationship a little bit more. And, you know, that's where you start communicating, because people say to me all the time, well, what if you catch feelings? You know, that's an unsafe feeling for some people, is like, they're afraid if they get into the lifestyle that, like, people are going to catch feelings for other people. And, like, that's something that me and my partner can openly communicate about all the time. Like, we always tell each other, if you do start to get feelings for somebody, please talk to me about that. Please communicate that with me so that we can move forward from there and figure out how we want to go about that. Do we want to open up to polyamory? Do we think that you should, like, talk to this person about those feelings and, like, see how they make them feel? Because those feelings might not be reciprocated, or that might be an agreement within their relationship that they can't cross that boundary. And that would be something that you all can talk about. And, you know, but it's definitely something that, you know, could have been communicated and could have been dealt with. And then, you know, it's something that communication and boundaries and agreements could have prevented. And this is, like, with all situations like this. I think if you have the right communication skills and the right boundaries and stuff, like, I'm not saying that breakups don't happen and that people don't get divorced in the swinger lifestyle, because they do. It's something that happens. It's a part of life. But if I quit doing monogamy because I got divorced in my first marriage, I guess monogamy doesn't work, you guys. I got a divorce, so I guess it doesn't work. I wouldn't have ever dated again, you know, and I would just be a loner for the rest of my life if monogamy always worked, right? Like, non-monogamy sometimes doesn't work. Swinging sometimes doesn't work. Polyamory and relationship anarchy and whatever your relationship style is, sometimes it doesn't work, no matter how many safety precautions you put into it. Like, it just doesn't work for those two people. That doesn't mean that as a relationship style it doesn't work, and that doesn't mean that it can't work for you. But what it does mean is, like, sometimes we have to go through bad breakups, and they hurt, and they're painful, and they suck. Nobody likes being broken up with. Nobody likes getting divorced. Like, those things are hard, and they suck, but we do run that risk. And is it not a risk in monogamy? No, dude, like, it's totally a risk in monogamy too. Like, that's just being human. Like, we fall in love with other people sometimes, or things happen. And, you know, another risk that you take is, you know, can your partner cheat on you even if you're non-monogamous? Yes. Yes. People get cheated on in the lifestyle and the polyamorous lifestyle and the swinger lifestyle. People get cheated on. A cheater is a cheater. Anything that you do that's dishonest, that's why it's really important to have open lines of communication with your partner always, always, always. Talk to your partner if you're feeling some type of way about someone or a situation, if there is a red flag about someone, or if you have that feeling in your gut, if you're the partner and you're like, oh my God, she's been, you know, like we had this situation where I had met somebody online and this was like a really close friend of mine and he was a single person in lifestyle. He's no longer single, but he was a single person in lifestyle. And my partner was like, hey, dude, are you like, do you have feelings for him? And I was like, yeah, I kind of do. He was like, all right, girl, listen, I would totally normally be fine with this in a normal setting. But like, here's the thing. I don't think that that's cool for him. Because you are in a hierarchical relationship, and he didn't use this terminology, but like you're in a hierarchical relationship with me. I am your number one. And I feel bad because this person is going to put their eggs in your basket and you are not going to be able to reciprocate that to them because you are focused on me. So let's think about how is that consensual? Is that fair to that person? Is that ethical? Because me and him had this conversation and I was like, I really don't think that's ethical, Brad. Like, I don't think it's ethical. That's not fair to him. He deserves better than that. So then I had to have that conversation with the other person where I was like, hey, bro, listen, I love you to death. But like, I'm starting to develop feelings for you. So I think it's best that right now we kind of keep a distance from each other until I can figure that shit out, because I don't want to put us in a situation where I hurt you. Because that's not fair to you and you deserve better than that. And like, obviously now he's in a great relationship and he's super happy and like we didn't move forward with anything. But it was really great that my partner was able to recognize that in me, not get mad at me and not like totally freak out at me and be like, you fucking cheating whore. Because I didn't do anything wrong. You know, I was just like having late night conversations with this guy and spending a lot of time like texting him and communicating with him. And my partner noticed like this change in behavior and was like, hey, girl, what's going on? You can be open with me. And it was great that he opened that communication with me and we were able to talk about it and we were able to be like, he was able to say to me like, hey, I'm not having this conversation with you because I feel unsafe. I'm having this conversation with you because I actually fucking like this dude and I don't think this is fair to him. Like, he deserves the best girl in the world and you can't provide that for him. So like, let's be real here. I know that you're in this little like fantasy land of you just want to love everybody and share love, but like, let's talk about how this isn't fair to this person and he deserves better than that. And like, that was really cool of Brad. So kudos to Brad for being emotionally intelligent in that situation where I had my head in the clouds and I was like, oh my God, there's this like really cute guy that I really like. And like, oh my God, maybe we can be like poly. Oh my God. And like, you know what I mean? So I think that, yeah, just opening up with your partner and like having those conversations is the best and most safest way. And also letting your partner know that like they're safe to come to you. You know, if they do start getting feelings for someone, and then how to move forward from that. And like being emotionally intelligent enough to know that, like, again, this is a risk that you take and you take those bridges as they come. So with all of this being said, stay safe out there, my friends, with everything emotionally, physically, you know, vaginally, stay safe. Keep your penis safe, all right? Like, so I love you guys. I hope that you like this podcast. I hope that you found value in it, because talking about it, I found a lot of value in that. So thank you guys so much. Peace and love, and stay safe. And thanks for riding on the Pineapple Express with me.